morning. I'd like to call to order this hearing of the Tax Reform Division of the Senate Tax Committee, Thursday, February 28th, 2013. The first item of business is consideration of the minutes from This is Thursday, March 14th, and we're looking back to Thursday, February 28th for the minutes. Are there any corrections to the minutes? Seeing none, Senator Coonan moves that the minutes from February 28th, 2013 be approved as distributed. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails, and we have the minutes before us. We're waiting for Senator Bonhoff, but we can move to, is she coming right away?
Mm-hmm. She was just, it was taking her a while to get here, so we may just go to Coonan.
Okay, Senator Coonan, are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we'll begin then with Senator Coonan, since Senator Bonhoff has been delayed. Senate file 226, and Senator Nelson, I think your bill deals with the same area. Do you want to come and we can once again have a conversation about
I'll bring Jeff Nelson up also.
Mm-hmm.
That's who.
Conversation about the Angel Investment Credit. I think everyone knows we're pretty interested in the success that it's had and continuing it as we can. So we have also Mr. Nelson from the from Deed, and we welcome him to the committee and to this discussion as well. Senator Coonan, you want to start and just give us the bones of Senate File 226, and then we'll look at 220, and then we'll ask Senator Nelson to explain 285, and then have some discussion. Senator Coonan, okay. Senate File 226 is before us.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. Senate File 226, it's a kind of a change to the law that was passed in 2010 where the legislature initiated the Angel Investor Tax Credit, and the goal, of course, was to attract private investment in startup companies. The legislature at that time appropriated $60 million over 5 years for this credit. The current Angel Investor Credit is not meeting the needs of the whole state, and what I mean by that is that in 2012, for example, 95% of the qualifying investments were made in the 7-county metro area. And so what this bill does then is create a new category of business under the tax credit law called a qualified greater Minnesota business. And those businesses must be located outside of the 7-county metropolitan area. An investor in a qualified greater Minnesota business is eligible for, and this is the change, for a tax credit of 50% of the qualifying investment, whereas the bill originally was 25% statewide. So these qualifying businesses would be up to 50%. A qualified greater Minnesota business must be headquartered in greater Minnesota and have at least 51% of its payroll and employees located in greater Minnesota. And then, as in current law, if a business that fails to meet the employment or payroll requirements during the 5 years following the investment, will have the credit revoked. And again, that's current law. This bill has no new funding, so it just takes the current funding and divides it out in the way I just described. And that's the difference between this and Senator Nelson and Senator Bonhoff's bill, and they can explain their bills. But thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Nelson, you want to just explain the difference,
yes.
And then we'll have your testifier and And then we'll hear from Mr. Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee. Madam Chair, I would like to move the Senate File 285, and I have an author's amendment.
Okay.
That I'd like someone to move.
I should have asked. Excuse me. I should have asked Senator Kennedy. Did you have an amendment to your bill?
Madam Chair, I do not. I'm just leaving it as it is,
so it's
a good comparison to the other bills. Thank
Senator
you.
Senator Nelson wants us to consider
the A2 amendment.
The
Madam
A2
Chair?
Amendment has that been distributed?
Do we have
it? It's in your folders, members. If you want to take that out. Senator Thompson. On the author's behalf, would you move the A2 amendment?
So moved, Madam Chair.
The A2 amendment has been moved. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Do we have?
The motion prevails, and the A2 amendment is now on Senate File 285. Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee. As Senator Coonan said, he aptly described, I believe this committee is aware of the Angel Investor Tax Credit that's been in place since 2010. And what has happened over that time, as Senator Coonan mentioned, 95% of the investment has gone into the 7-county metro area, and yet it's a statewide program. And so the bill that I have before you today, Senate 285, would change our current Angel Investor Tax Credit so that those investments outside the 7-county metro area would receive a 50% tax credit instead of the current 25% tax credit. Now, my bill is a bit different than Senator Coonan's, and let me explain how. The bill is amended before you increases the yearly allotment to $17 million. It currently is $12 million. The amendment before you further clarified that it's not retroactive. In other words, we're not taking that $17 million in credits back to 2010. It's just from today forward. And that was the gist of the A2 amendment. So it increases the amount yearly from $12 million to $17 million from today forward. It doubles the credit for investments in outstate or the non-7-county metro area. And there's another element of my bill that I think I should draw the attention of the committee to, and that is Section 5, which requires an annual report to the legislature determining the number of qualified small business investment credits that are for minority and women-owned businesses. And that was an important provision that I worked with Senator Torres Ray on last year when I offered this bill as well. So, Madam Chair, I believe the committee understands the need for this bill and the differences between my bill and Senator Coonan's bill. There is a revenue estimate for you in your packets as well, and that further clarifies that there's an additional $5 million in years 14 and 15 in my bill. And then in 16, because I'm extending, I think I may have forgotten to mention that, my bill extends the program for one additional year. And so that cost is $17 million for that year. So you have that revenue note in your packet as well. So with that, Madam Chair, I think the committee has a good sense of the bill and how mine is different. And I have Gary Newman with me to explain why this bill is so important to areas outside the 7-county metro area.
Thank you, Senator Nelson. I'm sorry, I think I'm starting to lose my voice here, but welcome to the committee, sir, if you would identify yourself for the record.
Madam Chair, members.
And excuse me, Senator Nelson, do you have a handout?
Yes.
Page is coming. Welcome to the committee. I'm pleased to hear your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm Gary Newman. I'm the Assistant City Administrator for the City of Rochester.
I wonder if you could move the microphone closer, please. Thank you.
And I have worked on economic development projects for the city for quite a number of years now. In the last 2 years, I've worked with five startup companies that have evolved from Mayo Technologies, and we found that companies who are in the earliest stage of development struggle to raise sufficient funding to get an idea to production. They typically layer their funding from as many sources as they can find. In our area, they typically get some money from the city. They get some money from our Area Economic Development Organization, which is a group called READY. They also try and get some funding from the Southeast Minnesota Initiative Fund. They put in money of their own, and then they try and secure the private investment that's needed to finish it off and get a product moving. The Angel Investment Tax Credit is a wonderful new tool that is very helpful. One of our companies successfully utilized the Angel Investment Tax Credit and probably wouldn't have been started without that funding. As Senator Nelson, Senator Coonan have pointed out, the statistics would show over the past 3 years that 95% of the funding has gone to the metro area. There may be many reasons for that. There's obviously more investors and more capital in the metro area, and that may have something to do with the difficulty of getting some of the money in greater Minnesota. But given the track record of over the past 3 years, from our perspective, we think it'd be reasonable to try a different approach and increase the tax credit amount for greater Minnesota and see if that will provide a better balance to the use of this program to provide true statewide benefit to all areas of Minnesota. Those are my comments. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Newman. Are there any questions, comments from Mr. Newman? Thank you. We do have Mr. Nelson, I believe, is here from Deed, and there are some handouts that have been provided by the department. And I thought it would be helpful as we're looking at these bills to just have him explain that what's happened with the Angel Investment Credit.
Could we get a copy of those, please?
Of course.
The page or somebody.
It's a summary, Senator Nelson, Senator Coonan, of the Angel. You might want to make sure that Senator Bonhoff has a copy of it as well. The 2012 program summary that was done as of 12/26/2012, and then on the other side is kind of a synopsis of the 2013 Angel Credit bills. And I think he's going to go through and explain those categories. Some of them I'm not sure what they mean. So, but welcome to the committee. If you'd identify yourself, please, and tell us about the success of the Angel Investment Credit and what this program summary represents.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Jeff Nelson. I work for the Department of Employment and Economic Development, and I run the Angel Tax Credit Program. I think the program has been, from my eyes, a very large success. The program began in 2010. In the 3 years it's been in existence, over 300 businesses have received over $130 million of investment pursuant to the program. It is a long-range program. The hope is that some of those 300 businesses are going to become our next 3M, our next Medtronic, our next big company that will be employing many people in the state. The information I provided, I really want to go over the 2013 Angel Bills chart on the back.
Sure.
And just sort of, this was my quick effort the other day of trying to summarize all the different provisions that various legislators.
I think this will be very helpful as we put together a bill on dealing with what kind of tax credits we are looking at to have this kind of summary. It gives us a good menu.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Currently, the Angel Bill provides for $12 million in tax credits per year. Last year, we ran out of credits on July 24th. So for the second half of the year, there were no credits available, and I know that had a very large detriment to businesses that were seeking investment.
So what happens when a corporation decides that they would like to apply for this, what do they do?
The process, Madam Chair, is fairly simple. A business applies to us to get certified to participate in the program. That we just check to make sure they fit the parameters of the program, that they're primarily a high-tech business, that kind of thing. Also, the investors certify to get to participate in the program. And then jointly, the third step is that the businesses and the investors apply to us for a credit allocation. When they do that, they're telling us what amount they're planning to invest, and based on that application, we reserve sufficient amount of credits for them. So as I said before, last year when we were reserving the credits for people, we ran out on July 24th.
It's a system that works a little bit like the bond allocation system does in the Housing Finance Agency.
Yes, yes.
There's no point at which a credit goes unused. Is that correct? And so what if they don't come through? Do they give it back?
What happens is, and it did happen this year, we allocated all the credits that we had available, but the businesses and investors then have 60 days to complete their transaction. If they don't complete their transaction, then the credits go back into the pool, and that pool is rolled forward to the next year. So this year, 2013, while the legislature allocated $12 million in new credits, we actually have 12.7 because we have 0.7 million carried over from the previous year.
And the law allows that carryover so that it all gets used.
In fact, the law, once
requires.
We do the full allocation, we can't allocate anymore, so it does have to roll over.
Okay, it has to roll over. Any questions about the program itself? Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I don't know if Ms. Pollack is quite ready or not, but I think this sheet that you have is really good. I was going to ask her if she would walk through what the provisions were that we've already heard a little bit this year that were heard as part of the vetoed bill. There were investor provisions in that bill that are slightly different than what's on this sheet, and if Ms. Pollack, if you're ready, maybe you could walk through that.
Okay, before she does that, could you just explain what the different columns mean? There's at least one column that I don't understand.
Yes, Madam Chair, I'd be happy to do that, and it might relieve Ms. Pollack of having to explain what some of these things are also. The first column there is the credit dollar increase. As we started off by saying, the program has $12 million per year. Last year, we ran out on July 24th. This year, at the rate that we're going, I anticipate we're going to run out of tax credits in either May or June.
The $17 million, for example, for Senator Nelson's bill is $17 million beginning in 2016 as opposed to the $5 million plus $5 million in 14 and 15. Is that correct? I'm trying to understand that.
Yes, there's, Madam Chair, there's already 12 in the program.
I'm trying to understand it when I'm looking at the revenue estimates. I look at Senator Coonan's and I see $8 million and $8 million for 2014 and 2015.
Madam Chair,
and I don't see any credit increase. So I'm just trying to figure out what's happening.
Madam Chair, I believe what they're trying to show there are the increases above the $12 million that's already been appropriated. And it's a little difficult sometimes to figure this out because the program is run on a calendar year basis, and
okay.
I would guess that some of the fiscal notes are on a fiscal year basis.
Okay.
But basically, the different bills are proposing to increase the amount of credits per year from the $12 million to the amounts indicated in the column here.
Okay, what is the next column? And then we can go to
Madam Chair.
Ms. Pollack.
Madam Chair, can you go back? You started to say that the money was going to run out so this calendar year, and then it'll run out May this calendar year next May?
Senator and Madam Chair, for 2013, calendar year 2013, which began for us, of course, on January 1, I anticipate we're going to run out of our $12 million in credits, or 12.7, because we had some carryover, as I said before, in either late May or early June.
This year.
This year.
Okay.
What does the next column mean?
The next column is referring to various provisions in the bills that we summarize by saying they're anti-gaming. Let me explain.
Yes.
The bill, as originally passed, requires investors to hold their investments for 3 years. If they don't hold the investment for 3 years, they have to repay the tax credit. There are, however, some exceptions. One of those exceptions is that if a company goes public, then they're not required to hold the investment for 3 years. What these provisions are doing is we ran into a couple situations where investors made their investment, got their tax credit, but knew the company was going to go public in just a few more months, so that they were then able to sell that investment, reap the benefits of the gain, and get the tax credit. What these anti-gaming provisions that are in all these different bills do is try to eliminate that.
You know, I was having the hardest time figuring out where in here does it talk about gambling? And you just mean gaming the system, not
gaming the system,
not
yes.
Gambling. Okay, all right.
Madam Chair, I'd be happy to continue through the various.
Well, I think Ms. Pollack is going to talk to us. Senator Skoy, what was your pleasure in asking Ms. Pollack to review?
Well, Madam Chair, I think this is a good sheet for us to look at as we're considering this area, but we have had previous discussion this year that's not included on this sheet, and if Ms. Pollack could bring that to our attention, what the differences are, so we can consider that
there,
also.
There are more bills.
Well, it was in the vetoed bill from last year. Senator Ortman worked on it last year, we've had discussion on that,
yes.
And I'd like to bring that
Yes,
up
let's let's have that, and then we'll go back to going over the various differences again, and Mr. Nelson can complete telling us about this chart, but we'll let Ms. Pollack tell us about Senator Ortman's work last year. Ms. Pollack.
Madam Chair and members, just looking over the bill from last year, it did contain the anti-gaming the system language, so the definition of liquidation event. It contained some language that the business had not been in operation for more than 20 years if they were engaged in medical research or pharmaceuticals, and I believe most of these bills have that provision as well. As far as the credit goes, the bill from last year allocated $16.5 million in credits, so a difference of $4.5 million from the current 12 for tax year 2012, and then went back down to $12 million for 2013 and 2014. The bill also contains some language to promote the credit in Greater Minnesota, and this is slightly different than the bills this year. It required the commissioner of deed to develop a plan to promote and increase awareness of the credit in Greater Minnesota, and with a target goal of 30% of the credits being allocated for Greater Minnesota businesses. If that goal was not reached, then the credit allocation was increased to 40%. In these bills, I think the credit allocation is just increased outright to 50%. And that's about it. There's some data privacy provisions that are contained that were contained in the bill last year that were in Senator Bonoff's bill 730 and in Senator Chamberlain's bill 131 that we heard earlier this session.
Mr. Nelson, you know, I think what we need to do in order to complete the menu is to put Senator Ortman's provisions from last year on this. I think that would be very helpful because I think some of the things that she had are of great interest to us. Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And one of the reasons I wanted to make sure that this got brought up is because I recalled the trigger mechanism I thought was intriguing.
Okay. So we'll this is since so many people are interested in that, we really do need to have the Ortman provisions as well. You want to just continue and with explaining the chart, yes. And then we'll ask Senator Bonoff to come up.
Just, do you remember this bill?
Senator Eaton, excuse me.
I was just going to ask Madam Chair to hear Senator Bonoff's bill.
Yes, so we're going to get to that.
Okay, yeah. Thank you.
let's see. When we have bills dealing all with the same subject among friends, I wonder, why don't we invite Senator Bonoff up to explain her bill, and then we can get back into this comparison chart, if that's okay. And we will lay over Senate file. Senate File 226, and then we'll lay over Senate File 285 as amended. And Mr. Nelson, you can just stay right there. Senator Bonoff. Senator Bonoff brings us Senate File 730. Senator Bonoff.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I appreciate how much interest there is this year in the Angel Investment Credit. And the bill that is before you in Senate File 730 is a little bit different than the bills you've heard. I will say, though, that 730 has incorporated Senator Nelson's provision, so the Greater Minnesota part is already within this bill. But there have been some concerns around the gaming of the system that have been addressed in this bill a little bit differently than in the other bills. And so the testifiers that I have here today are to talk about why we took that approach. So the first thing you'll see in this bill is that when it talks about how the investment can be used on page 1 on line 1.21, and it lists that can be made in exchange for common stock, a partnership or membership interest, preferred stock. We have stricken debt with mandatory conversion to equity. And again, I'll let my testifier speak to why that was. In addition, as we list who is eligible to participate in this, we've put a few parameters. We've said the business cannot be publicly traded. The proprietary technology can be no more than 10 years. The business cannot have a liquidation event within 180 days after the investment was made. And then, in addition, we have upped the overall investment to $20 million, so our fiscal note is for the additional $8 million. We did that given we were also incorporating the Greater Minnesota. We believe, you know, the demand is such that obviously, given it runs out well before the calendar year, that we should do everything we can to put our investment in this as we look at this as an overall tool to grow a new and emerging industry in our state. The other thing I just wanted to point to that is not in the bill, but I think should be discussed as part of this overall discussion, is on section... Well, it's on page 3, number 6, on line 3.24. That states that in order to be eligible, the business has to meet certain wage requirements. And I wanted members to know that I have, since I first started with this bill, I have received calls from businesses saying that that is a real problem, because while it's fine when they're looking at their management and their supervisory level and even, you know, many of their front line, but to a manufacturing company who then has production line, they do not pay those kind of wages, and so they're disqualified. So right now there is a real resurgence in manufacturing in Minnesota, and so by putting this particular parameter on it, we're in essence cutting out a sector that we may, in fact, want to have be eligible. So I've brought this to the attention of Deed. I don't know that they're ready to take a position on it, and so I'm not asking to move on that, but it seems to me that you're going to be looking at all of these provisions, so I would ask that to still be an open question.
Senator Bonoff, that's less than $20 an hour.
Yeah, $18 an hour. So when you're doing... So, for example, if you're on a production line, many of them, you know, $12 an hour is a standard for certain of the activities that happened on a production line around the state.
Hard to buy groceries.
Madam Chair, that was that paragraph was top. There was a lot of heated discussion about that paragraph last year in committee.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
Senator Dingsick was indicating that last year when we were considering this provision that what the wage requirement was a matter of great discussion in the committee. But thanks for bringing it to our attention. Probably if there's a change in it, there's going to be a great deal of more discussion.
Madam Chair, I withdraw that even suggestion because I've just been told that the governor feels quite strongly about that provision.
There you go.
Okay. And but for members' information, other states who do the Angel Investment Program do not have that requirement. They've backed away from that. So.
Okay. Thank you for the information. welcome to the committee. If you'd identify yourself, please, for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. My name is John Alexander. I was brought to Minnesota about 21 years ago as an officer of St. Jude Medical, primarily responsible for growing the company with new technologies and acquisitions. Since leaving St. Jude, I've run medical technology companies. I've done turnarounds. I've also started two angel investment funds, and I've been working on this particular piece of legislation for 13 years. As Jeff Nelson mentioned, the Angel Investment Tax Credit has proven to be an early success. I understand the formal deed report for 2012 comes out on Friday, but based upon the quarterly reports and the information already out, over 300 companies have received $157 million of private investor capital since inception about 3 years ago. $39 million of that has come into credits. About 500 unique investors have taken money out of their pockets, savings, and alternative investments to put them into Minnesota startups. 29% of those, or approximately 29% of those, are outside the state. So this tax credit has drawn money in from other states and, in some cases, other countries to invest in Minnesota companies. We're in the middle of our fourth year of the program. In the second year of the program, we ran out of the money in November of 2011 as forecast. In the third year, we ran out in July. The bill. Okay. As we'd forecast. We estimate that the current program will be out of money for this year, or bill out of this year, as of May. For your information, as of last week, $7.7 million of the 12 remains in the bill for this year. So approximately $5 million of credits have been issued in a little over 2 months. Due to demand in 2011, our nearest neighbor, Wisconsin, expanded their program to $20 million. And you may recall in 2009, 2010, when we were in the midst of discussing this, we had lost a number of companies across the Wisconsin border because they had a credit and we did not. We became and are the 24th state in the United States to have an angel investment tax credit. But to the best of my knowledge, with the result of this tax credit, we have lost no further companies across the border to Wisconsin. Still, there's an opportunity to tighten this legislation so that more of the program goes where it's intended, toward emerging technology companies with defensible intellectual property that will build clusters and cores and beachheads here for Minnesota and create jobs for the long term, into companies and new technology rather than very old companies, very old technology, failed business models that are refreshed through artfully spinning off those patents. And into equity of companies that allows for very simple rather than complex or failed funding rounds that results in companies that cannot be financed. And so in a world of limited resources, it seems wise to tweak this program to get more of the intended benefit towards the benefits that we intended with this legislation. So we're recommending a number of improvements to the Angel Investment Tax Credit that are embodied in the Bonhoeff bill. One is the increase to at least $20 million, which matches the Wisconsin model and matches the historical and near-term and anticipated demand for the companies in our state. Add 5 years to the program to allow for time to fully evaluate the effect upon emerging technology companies. In addition to further testimony here, you'll see a letter from Mark Ungs. Mark Ungs is a executive from Boston Scientific, who left 5 years ago and started a medical device company called Intervalve. Last month, they received FDA approval for a new technology to improve cardiovascular surgery, and he rises to support the bill in that letter. He was not unable to be here today. The principal body of the changes that we've recommended that are included in the bill restrict gaming, as Jeff Nelson started to talk to you about. First of all, restrict to patents only as the evidence that there is technology. Loose language in the current bill allows trade secrets so that businesses that are relying upon trade secrets get funded that aren't really in the intent of the original legislation but are in fact pure service. And so the wages aren't high, the defensibility against competition is not high, and in a world of limited resources, companies that come along later in the year don't get funded. We recommend to tie the investment tax credit to the age of the underlying technology rather than the company or the legal entity. Right now, we have evidence of companies with technologies that are as old as 24 years that spun that technology off into a brand new company that then got funded. Limit the security to equity and specifically exclude convertible debt. Now, debt as an instrument has advantages over equity. It comes first in the event of a liquidation. It can secure the assets or intellectual property of the company. And the convertible debt as a feature became popular when the venture market began to fall apart in 2008. What we've seen is companies that have done convertible on top of convertible and in some cases on top of a third convertible so that when they eventually get priced by a venture capitalist, not only do the founders and the seed investors get washed out, but those that have participated in the convertible get discounted. It's a security that has been whose use has been extended far beyond the original intent. And the intent here is for people to take money out of their pockets, vote with the owners and the founders, and make a very simple equity investment, and everybody's on roughly the same playing field. Lastly, in terms of the gaming restrictions, a clawback of the credit for investors in which a liquidity event occurs within 6 months. So this is the in case the company goes public and knew about it, in case it gets bought, it gets and you knew about it, in case there's a reverse merger or a sale, that this doesn't go into a long-term investment. And then lastly, for deed itself to qualify information on the qualified companies so that investors and others can know who to contact if they're interested. Other states have done this, and deed supports doing this. Thank you.
And, Madam Chair, I did forget to offer my amendment. I do have an amendment, A2 amendment, that changes the effective date.
The Angel Investment Credit does not specify how a business must be organized, does it?
No, Madam Chair. In terms of whether it be an S-corp or something.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Senator Eaton moves the A2 amendments, an author's amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails and the amendment is adopted.
Madam President?
I'm just a chair here. Oh.
Well, I saw you up there yesterday.
Excuse me, Madam Chair.
Senator Bonnoff, for testifiers, I don't know if I've seen this anywhere, but we see the cost to the state, whether it's the present credit that we're giving or future increases. Do we have any return on investment related to taxes that come into Minnesota as a result of new businesses?
Senator Bonnoff?
Madam
Mr.
Chair, I'll
Nelson?
Defer to Mr. Nelson.
Senator, Madam Chair, we do provide, the department does provide an annual report to the legislature. That report is this year or early next year going to be supplemented by a very comprehensive review being conducted by the Department of Revenue. We've contracted out for a consultant to do a complete evaluation of the report, and that will include a return on investment calculation.
Mr. Nelson, when did you say when that report is coming?
I believe that will be January of next year. We do, however, provide in our annual report an estimate of the wages created from the jobs that the program does create. And the report for 2012 will be hopefully coming out tomorrow, as it's due to the legislature tomorrow.
Well, we will add that report to our consideration as we are looking at these bills. Is there further testimony? If you'd identify yourself, please, for the record.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. I'm Aaron Cardell, founder of a three-year-old technology startup called Mobile Realty Apps. We do have patented technology, and we recently had to decide whether we were going to continue with slow organic growth or raise funding to grow further faster. And despite the fact that we have substantial year-over-year revenue growth and a number of key metrics in our favor, Minnesota is a difficult environment to raise investment capital in. The Minnesota Angel Tax Credit provided a significant incentive for angel investors to make an investment early this year. And I'm pleased to report that because of those investments, we've been able to make five additional hires in 5 weeks. We plan to make 10 additional hires over the course of the year here. And, you know, this investment has really allowed us to secure our roots here in Minnesota. We haven't had to look at moving to other states or to the coast. And, you know, I do know many other entrepreneurs of technology companies in this same position, and ask that you consider raising the allocation for 2013 so that we can see more technology startups continue to establish their roots here in Minnesota.
Where is your business located?
In Minneapolis.
Minneapolis. Thank you for your testimony. Are there any questions or comments for Senator Bonhoeff or her testifiers? Are there any questions, further questions for Mr. Nelson about analysis of the bills that he's handed out? Then thank you very much. I think you'll find that as we are able, committee will be very, very interested in, to the extent possible, that we can keep this program going and making sure that it's the credits are going to the right people for the right reasons. And we
thank you
appreciate
very much,
all
Madam
the work
Chair.
That people have done on this, starting with Senator Ortman last year.
Madam Chair, just in closing, Mr. Mandel did come from Life Science Alley, but he's agreed not to testify at this time as I have another bill up. So
okay.
Thank you.
Right. And he's going to be testifying on some other things. So, Senator Wieger. We're going to lay Senate File 730 over as amended. Senator Wieger brings us Senate File 337.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I have an A1 author's amendment.
Sure. Is that amendment in our packets?
No.
Then it needs
it's
to be distributed.
Being distributed.
As it's being distributed, Senator Wieger, would you like to just start explaining your bill, and then we'll
adopt
the amendment?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Senate File 337 provides a veteran's jobs tax credit. The intent is to encourage, through a financial incentive, a tax credit to have more veterans hired. There's three tiers in this credit. One would be for disabled vets, another for unemployed vets, and final to just hire a vet. As you know, for many of the returning vets from the early 2000 on, we have over 20% unemployment. There's been a number of initiatives. Some progress is being made, but not nearly enough. So the bottom line is explained in the different tiers of credits. This would provide a tax credit, which would hopefully lead to the additional hiring of vets in the classifications that are listed. I have one testifier. If we could have Mr. Davis talk more about the need. And
sure. Welcome. Excuse me again. Welcome, Mr. Davis, to the committee, if you'd identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Dennis Davis. I'm a veteran, and I am actually still serving. My service record includes I'm in my 14th year of service, two different branches of service, both active and reserve, enlisted an officer. I've deployed twice in support of Operations Iraqi Freedom and Enduring Freedom. I also happen to be founder and chief translation officer for a company by the name of Metafrazo. I help companies create sustainable, replicatable veteran hiring initiatives. I speak both military and corporate hiring. Over a decade of work in private talent acquisition sector, I've seen hundreds of thousands of resumes, I've interviewed thousands of candidates, and I've made hundreds of hires. There's a rich military history in Minnesota. It dates back to the Civil War and all conflicts since. We've had 46 Medal of Honor winners with connections to the state of Minnesota. During service in Iraq, the Red Bulls lost 16, received 79 Purple Hearts, and served longer in Iraq than any other unit, guard, reserve, or active duty. So why are we here today? Veteran unemployment is at or near all-time highs. Those serving since 2001, as the senator said, have reached as high as 22.9% in 2011 for veteran unemployment. Again, those that have served since 2001. Currently, for all veterans, it is nearly 12%, over twice the state rate of 5.5%. So there's definitely a disparate impact on veterans, especially those that are younger and have returned since 2001. The majority of the military population in Minnesota are people like me, members of Guard or Reserve units. We're not active duty. We are part-time and called at any moment. I believe I'm on a 26-hour reporting notice, and I could go anywhere in the world in 26 hours. That has a disparate impact on the state of Minnesota employers as well. Over the last 12 years, many have deployed repeatedly and have left employers weary of continued absences of employees and thus hesitant to hire active service members for fear they will be deployed. I've personally transitioned on and off active orders no less than four times over 8 years. This translates into fewer veterans hired and disproportionately high unemployment rates. As operational tempos overseas slow, more veterans will be in the market. With proposed budget cuts at the federal level, more than 200,000 will exit the service nationally each of the next 5 years. Pending changes here locally at the 934th Airlift Wing could mean hundreds of job cuts. I happen to be a member of that here at the local 934th, and refer any questions to the public affairs office out there, but there are pending changes coming, and if we do indeed lose our planes and change our mission, there are potentially hundreds of cuts coming, and that's just one example here in the state of Minnesota. So what can we do? Senate File 337 and its companion in the House 532 provide an incentive for employers to hire veterans. There's broad bipartisan support on both sides, with the House having nearly 50 authors, so just over a third of the entire House has already signed on board. It's the same exact bill in Senate File 337 that we're talking about today. Secretary of State is in full support of this bill. Employer support is growing. I don't know if you received the memo on the employer support, but there's employer support that is continuing to grow in the private sector. Working with the Revisor's Office, I helped craft this bill to mirror current federal legislation known as WOTC, which is Work Opportunity Tax Credits, providing credits at the federal level enacted by the current administration during the previous term and has been recently extended. Senate File 337 represents the best opportunity available to incentivize behavior, which will positively impact all in the state of Minnesota. Credit levels aim to achieve a revenue-neutral bill. So people getting jobs, they are going to become taxpayers, and that increases revenue. Getting them off of benefits, that increases revenue. It also increases the revenue for the company, which creates a healthier work environment overall in the state of Minnesota. It's a win-win-win for the state, employers, and veterans. For every veteran hired and no longer dependent on state benefits, the people of Minnesota win. At the $3,000 level, which is the top credit, if somebody were to be on state unemployment benefits at the top level, the credit would pay for itself in 5 weeks. At $1,500, the credit would pay for itself in less than 3 weeks. At $500, it would pay for itself in less than 1 week should they need benefits. For every company hiring a veteran and receiving the credit, they win and the people of Minnesota win. The credit offsets costs of hiring and helps build a much stronger company. Veteran performance can increase company performance and productivity. A stronger company means a stronger economy and more jobs available. The entire state wins. Most of all, the veterans win. The ripple effects of this are wide and far-reaching. It is a win-win-win. Our veterans have given so much and will continue to always be there for us. Will we be there for them? More must be done to help our veterans find meaningful employment. Senate File 337 and the House Companion 532 does more and is the best tool we have. I cannot remember a time in recent memory when both sides have come together in such a fashion to craft legislation which could impact so many. This truly is a nonpartisan issue. I respectfully ask for your support of this measure.
Thank you very much, Mr. Davis. We need to adopt your A1 amendment, Senator Wieger, before we continue. Senator Eaton moves the A1 amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. So we have Senate File 337 as amended before us. That information was really very interesting, Mr. Davis and Senator Wieger. The federal credit is already in place. Is that correct?
Yes, Madam Chair.
And are the requirements and qualifications for that credit identical to the one that, I mean, this is, are they the same? Or are they, how are they different if they're not the same?
With my time in employment and hiring people and understanding that credit, it is a little bit cumbersome at the federal level to receive the credit. It requires people to be unemployed for a certain period of time, which then, you know, it penalizes the veteran in a way. Well, you must be unemployed for at least 30 days. We don't want anybody to be unemployed credit. So we removed those restrictions. I set it up very simply with the revisor's office. So you're defined as a veteran by federal statute, and if you can prove that, then the company gets the $500 credit. The $1,500 credit is very simple. If you were unemployed at the time of hire and had received unemployment compensation within the last 2 years, so you hear all the time of people have expired their benefits, they're no longer on unemployment, but they were unemployed. So within the last 2 years, all they have to do is provide documentation that they were on state benefits, and then they get that credit. For the disabled veteran, it's as simple as the Veterans Administration certification letter certifying them as disabled, and no, regardless of the compensation level or if it's a compensatable disability or not, they have the ability to get the company has the ability to get the credit. So trying to keep it very simple, I'm a big fan of simple, clean, easy to understand, and creating a system that is going to be easy for the state to manage and employers to take advantage of. What we don't want is employers to say, I don't really want to take advantage of the system because it's too complicated and cumbersome, and two, because it's I'm not interested in hiring the veteran because it just doesn't make any sense to me. I'll look elsewhere.
So, Mr. Davis, if an employer qualified for the federal credit, however, they would at the same time they could qualify for the Minnesota credit.
Absolutely.
They
pay taxes in both places, so this offsets, and it only offsets the taxes owed. We will not, if they earn the $3,000 tax credit. And we specifically wrote it this way, and they only owe $2,000 in taxes.
It's not a refundable credit.
We're not going to send them $1,000, okay. Which I believe is different than the federal.
The federal is a refundable credit?
I can't answer that for certain, but I believe it is.
Okay. So this this can be independent of the federal credit, but if a corporation or an employer qualifies for the federal credit, they would probably know almost automatically that they would qualify for this credit.
I would hope so. Yeah. You know, certainly a public relations campaign around this to get the word out that this is happening, but we've already had, I've been in two media appearances with KSTP and AM 1130, and we'll continue to do more media appearances to do that.
Questions for Mr. Davis or Senator Wieger? Senator Dietzick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For Senator Rieger, does this include public employees? And if you don't include them, why? And then does it include nonprofits? Especially, I'm interested in the nonprofits because I can see them hiring. I don't know if they pay taxes, and so that might be the reason why.
Madam
Mr.
Chair,
Davis,
Senator, the nonprofits. I'm a part of the Military Action Group MAG here on the Capitol Hill, and we've had discussions about the nonprofits. The nonprofits don't pay state income tax. So if there was a system that we've talked about this, if we created a system to offset payroll taxes at the state level, we certainly could entertain that. That would be far more complicated than what we have done. But because they don't pay income tax, then this doesn't affect them. But we would be open to that. The federal system does include nonprofits at a reduced rate. But again, because they're not paying state taxes, that's why they're not included. The public sector, I would assume, is the same answer because they're not paying taxes as well.
Senator Dietzig?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Do you know, and I know we had this discussion last year, and I don't know if it passed, but they get, especially in the public sector, like if they're applying for either a job as a firefighter or police or in certain things, they get, and I forget what it's called.
Preference.
Thank you. Did we increase that last year, and is that working to your knowledge?
In the
Mr.
public
Davis?
Sector?
Correct.
Madam
yeah.
Chair, Senator, I can't answer if it's working or not. I know in the private sector they did pass okay. Senator Ted Daley introduced it and was passed for the private sector. Word is still kind of trickling out about that. And they are continuing to work in the public sector. It's always been that the public sector could give a preference, but now the private sector can do that. So it's been around a long time in the public sector, and I do know many veterans that take advantage of that public sector preference. They get 5 points, 10 points in a weighted system, and I don't see that that's going to change. And I think that our veterans have earned that ability to take advantage of that.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments for Senator Rieger and Mr. Davis? Thank you very much. It's a very important presentation.
Thank you.
Thank you. So we will lay over Senate File 337 as amended. We're going to take up the next two bills together because one of them actually is not in the committee. It's just here for discussion. It's in the Jobs Committee. And the other one is, but they're coming, dealing with some of the same kind of opportunities for investment in Minnesota. So Senator Eaton and I will go to the witness table, and Senator Dietzig, would you take the gavel? Madam Chair and members, earlier this year, we started meeting with representatives, and we have Mr. Mandel here with us today from Life Science Alley. And they brought us a number of suggestions, some of them dealing with the Angel Investment Credit, their support for that, and also their support for the Mayo Clinic proposal, support for continuing the R&D credit, which I'm very interested in, and then some novel ways of also encouraging investment in the medical area. And I think if you look back on that sheet that, and so I have Senate File 1010, but it's in another committee, so it's just here for discussion. If you look back at the sheet that Mr. Nelson had for us on the back of it, it talked about where the Angel Investment Credit was, what kinds of businesses, and it's amazing how many medical device startups are in Minnesota. It's a niche for us, and it is it's an opportunity to continue to encourage that. In fact, I think it was on Mr. Nelson's sheet, it was the largest category. So Senate File 1010, we had a little bit of mix-up as we were putting these putting these bills in, but it allows for a way of supporting new companies while we continue to support them as they're coming online. And so what it does is to allow a company to, in effect, sell their NOLs, their net operating losses. We know that a lot of startup companies, as they're getting investments, they still do not run a positive bottom line. And the proposal is to allow a company to sell its net operating loss for a period of years to a profitable company that can use it to offset its own positive bottom line. And Mr. Mandel is going to talk to us about another state. In fact, I think it's the only state that has this kind of program, and it's New Jersey. And you'd wonder, well, why just one other state? And that's because New Jersey also is heavily into medical device in the industry and development there, and so it works for them. And the thrust of this is that it can work here in Minnesota, so that by the time the startup company is showing a positive, is showing actual income, it starts paying taxes immediately, rather than going back and recapturing, looking back at its net operating losses, so that it's even longer period of time before it starts paying Minnesota taxes. So that's one proposal, and I think if it's okay, we'll have Senator Eaton describe the other proposal. I don't have any amendments, and the bill's not here anyway. For her to describe her proposal, and then we'll, if it's okay, Madam Chair, then we'll ask Mr. Mandel to speak to both of them and why he thinks we should, and why we should start down this path with these two initiatives for Minnesota businesses, new businesses. Senator, thank
you. Mr. Chair, I have Senate file. Oh, Carrie, sorry. Madam Chair.
It's okay.
I have Senate file 1122, and I do have the A1 amendment. And this is similar. This was brought to me, and I find it kind of fascinating. It basically, if a larger corporation has a patented technology that they're not using, and they want to assist a smaller business getting started, they can transfer that ownership of that technology to that smaller company and allow that company to use it to develop their business. And in exchange, when or if the company becomes successful, the profits would be shared with the larger company. Is that correct? Pretty much?
Yeah.
Close. Okay. Anyway, the amendment clarifies that the business that gets that benefit is not part of the same company as the larger corporation providing the technology or patent.
at the Unitarian. Madam Chair and Senator Eaton, that's to prevent a unitary group from just doing a little bit of insider trading there. They can't do that. Oh, that's what number five, that's what the amendment accomplishes.
And there are conditions that 51% of the business's employees must be employed in Minnesota, and 51% of the business's total payroll must be paid or incurred in Minnesota. And the business must have less than $2 million in gross annual receipts in each of its three previous taxable years. And it must not have been in business for more than five.
Okay, Senator Eaton moves the A1 amendment. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any questions on the amendment? Okay. Any questions on either bill before we get to Mr. Mandel?
Madam Chair, you need to adopt the amendment based on the vote.
All right. The amendment is adopted. Thank you.
There you go.
All right. Now we will go on to any questions or Mr. Mandel.
I think we have Mr. Mandel.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you. My name is Shay Mandel. I'm with Life Science Alley. I'm our Executive Vice President and Chief Operating Officer, and we have been chatting with a lot of you about ways in which Minnesota can take advantage of some of what is truly unique here and do so in a way that grows our economy further, but also is sensitive to the budget constraints that we have. And so these are a couple of bills that we believe can be uniquely Minnesotan, and I'll walk you through both of them. And again, appreciate Senator Ress, Senator Eaton, and all of you that have provided leadership on this issue. If it's all right, Madam Chair, I'll just start with Senate File 1010, the first bill presented. We refer to this as the NOL, or Net Operating Loss Bill. It is, in fact, modeled after a law in New Jersey that was put in place in 1995. And to give some context, in the mid-90s, New Jersey, which has traditionally been a powerhouse of pharmaceutical companies, began to see changes and fear that the future of the pharmaceutical industry in New Jersey would get smaller, that we weren't having the startup companies that we normally have. It is very akin to our situation in Minnesota relative to medical devices. We do also have biotech and pharmaceutical companies in Minnesota. We are, in fact, 3.5 times more concentrated than any other place on the planet in terms of medical devices, and have one of the largest life science communities in the country and in the world. One of the things that's interesting about medical device and biotechnology and pharmaceutical companies is, in order to sell what you make, you have to get through an FDA process. That has always been long and complicated and expensive. Today it continues to get longer and more complicated and more expensive. So the business model for building a medical device company or a pharmaceutical company is literally to plan years and years of time, burning through investment capital, to get to a place where the FDA says okay, and then you can begin to market your product. So the business model, unlike most businesses, is to lose a significant amount of money for a long time. So we regularly see companies here in Minnesota that have a business plan of getting through finished R&D, IP, clinical trials, FDA process. For the next 5 years, investors A, B, and C, we're going to spend $125 million and not sell anything to anybody. It is in our best interest to keep those businesses moving forward. What this would allow those types of companies to do, and again, it's very clear in the bill that we've presented, this is focused on medical technology, biotech, pharma, those companies that have to go through this process, that their business plan has to lose money. It wouldn't make sense to prop up bad businesses. And in fact, in New Jersey, when they first put this in place, they applied it to all high-tech businesses. They did a 10-year study and found that in the biotech, biopharma, medtech space, it was wildly successful. New Jersey made money, hundreds of companies, thousands of jobs. In every other space, they got killed. So this is really focused on a business model that we can't change and that we have here in Minnesota. So what a company would be allowed to do is at the end of every year surrender their losses. So we've got our company that spent $25 million this year working on our clinical trials. We would surrender those losses. The state would capitalize what the tax liability would be on that, and we would be allowed to sell it. does a couple of things. One, it puts cash right back into the company, which helps to accelerate. We hired three new engineers to accelerate our R&D. We hire, you know, a few patients for expanded clinical trials, whatever it is. And, you know, if you're worried about, well, people are going to take the money and save it, remember, these are companies that are trying to get to profitability. If they don't get through the FDA process, they don't get a paycheck, we don't collect taxes on them, and their investors lose their money. So the incentive to put every dime into a business until it's profitable is exactly what the executive management's going to do. So they take those dollars, put them into their business to try and move things forward more quickly. When they become profitable, they don't have years of NOLs to write down. So for our companies who make it, the state of Minnesota actually begins to receive the benefits immediately. As you all know, for those companies that don't make it, we'll never receive those benefits. And so this is about trying to provide more support to our key industry in the early stage space to help them get to where they need to be. We also think it's a huge incentive for entrepreneurs that are starting med tech, biopharma, biotech companies, and other places to really take a look at starting those businesses in Minnesota. We've got the education, the workforce, the infrastructure, but this provides a huge economic incentive to grow an early stage business in Minnesota. So I'll stop there on the NOL and offer to answer any questions.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Mandel. So I actually have the New Jersey report here, and you kind of talked about it on the high tech, and they did the biotech and switching that. And in this bill, it's expanding emerging technology and biotechnology. So does that address the issue of, you know, what is an expanding emergency technology so that it stays in that high tech, or it's not in, quote, just high tech, but in the medical area?
Madam Chair, that is correct. I mean, the term emerging is intended to make sure we're focused on those companies that, in fact, are emerging companies. So, again, remember, this applies to companies that haven't made a profit. It is the characterization around biotechnology and those definitions that actually DEED would be engaged in certifying the industry sector. So the emerging aspect is just a characterization of the types of companies. And I don't think the legal parameters of that, we could take that out or leave it. And I'm not sure it makes a whole lot of difference.
Thank you. And then I believe in this bill, it is 75%. So the selling price of the carryover must equal at least 75% of the transfer tax benefit. And if I remember right, in New Jersey, it was 80%. What's the rationale for the difference?
Madam Chair, our intent in picking, and by the way, there's what New Jersey's law says, and then there's what actually happens in New Jersey. So what New Jersey did was set the threshold of what the price of the credits could go for at 80%. Because you create a marketplace for these tax credits, in actuality, in New Jersey, they sell at 98%. So the companies that take that benefit, it's essentially a small... quite frankly, we picked 75% because we knew that the marketplace would drive it higher anyway, and we thought it was more attractive than New Jersey.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions?
And Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator Rust.
When I'm looking at the language, I think that we probably are, at some point are going to need to really tighten that up in terms of the kinds of companies that we would allow this to be applied to. I would also point out that the cost of it, the $60 million, is scalable. It functions like the angel investment credit. There would be a certain amount of money, and then once that had been applied for and granted, then it's cut off. I mean, it could be $20 million. It could be $15 million. What's in here is $60 million, but that... we could determine what the cost of it would be as we started to move forward, and to see whether it was, it is indeed, as Life Science Alley claims, that it would work here. And I think it's a really, really interesting idea for us, and I could consider it, you know, part of a really something that reflects on tax reform within the corporate areas. We're trying to encourage the peculiar, if you will, because the only other state that has it is New Jersey, peculiar medical technology community that we have here in Minnesota that's world-renowned.
Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just for my own clarification, the only business structure that would qualify for this would be C-stock corporations.
I don't know the answer to that.
Well,
maybe
I was
Ms. Pollack.
Guessing it would, but maybe Ms. Pollack can help me.
Is that correct?
So.
Yes, because it's only the corporate franchise tax that you can use the NOL against. It's not individuals would not be able to do that.
Thank you. And then, so, and I see the department is here, so I'm not expecting an answer from them today, but maybe sometime. I mean, this is an accounting move that is going to delay income receipts for the state. So
that's
at some
correct.
Point, we would hopefully have successful businesses that would be, you know, returning the credit back into the state's coffers. Does anybody have any idea what kind of time frame that might be occurring under?
Well, if the FDA process can be as long as 7 or 8 years, is that correct?
Madam Chair, Senators, the FDA process, so what New Jersey has done, and again, it is a company-by-company basis, right? So there are two factors. What is the product they're trying to develop, and how long does that take to get through the FDA? And the second part of it is, you know, when are they profitable? The good news for us, so again, looking at the 10-year window that New Jersey studied, what New Jersey found is that the tax receipts that the state brought in relative to the tax credits let, that the state made money. They also, for those companies that participated in the program, the annual, so if you take any window of time, any single year in that 10-year period of time, the job growth ranged from 33 to 70%. I would say the good news for Minnesota is predominantly our companies that will be doing this will be med tech as opposed to pharmaceutical. The FDA lines are typically shorter in that space. It takes longer time to do a drug study than it does, even if you're doing a PMA, to get through the process for med tech. So, you know, but we are talking typically about 2, 3, 5, 7 year cycles from a company starting this process to being profitable. Now, again, the good news is in the world we live in today, those companies that reach success here in Minnesota have all those years of NOLs that they simply write back off. And so then the state of Minnesota waits another 5 years to start collecting taxes on them. In the scenario that we're presenting, they will have surrendered that tax opportunity, and therefore Minnesota will start collecting as soon as they are profitable.
Well, the one thing that can't be shown in the or isn't shown in the revenue estimate is it, what's only shown there is the amount of that could be moved elsewhere. It doesn't necessarily show what happens with the profitable company. And I think maybe that, Senator Skoy, Madam Chair, that's where you were going. And the net benefit is not shown in the revenue estimate. And I think that, you know, we don't allow dynamic scoring in terms of predicting things, and so we can only look at the amount of the credit that would be, or the amount of the credit that against liabilities that would be allowed by the net operating loss.
And Madam Chair, the other thing then, when I think about these relatively small companies, would they be having how many of these type of device patents would be ongoing in their business at any time? Are they doing 10 of them or 15 of them, or is there a cumulative thing here? Do they have some that are making money and some that are not? So I'm trying to just get a feel for what that would be like.
Madam Chair, Senator Skoy, the companies we're talking about, most likely we're talking about a patent or a small family of portfolio patents. So 3M has They file thousands of patent applications every year, Medtronic, et cetera. So you're talking about managing lots and lots of patents. Again, what we're talking about are those companies that are largely built around a technology or a therapy that is going through the process of getting through the FDA for the first time. Because if you've gone through this two or three times as a company, you're profitable. So we're not going back and saying to profitable companies, we'll find your new experiment and categorize that as not profitable and take advantage of this. These are literally companies that have no profit. So by and large, they are almost always focused around getting a single therapy or a single device in a patent or a small family of patents to market for the first time. And so that's who we're targeting.
Madam Chair.
Did that answer your question?
Yeah, no, it does, okay. Madam Chair. So then the 250 full-time employees, is that a number that might be higher than you would think about?
Madam Chair, Senator, the reason we picked the number 250 is while these are small businesses in the sense that they're early stage and that they haven't made a profit, because of the nature of the work, sometimes we're talking about a fair number of employees. So when you think about a company that spends, you know, $125 million over a two- or three-year period of time, with scientists, engineers, business people, depending on what they're doing, a small company that's losing money might have $150 million in investments and 120 or 130 employees. And employees can move in and out of a company depending on how they need to meet needs pretty quickly. So we picked the number 250 to be safe and to characterize, to make sure we didn't miss companies that could accelerate and grow, get past this quickly, but needed 220 employees to complete a trial, for example. But we also, you know, at that number, we're talking about companies, again, that don't fall into any of the bigger companies that would change the dynamics of what we're attempting to do. Is that fair?
Thank you.
Senator Eaton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to mention, which I didn't before, that the royalties that are received by these corporations from these transfers would be exempt from corporate franchise tax for no more than 10 years or $10 million, whichever came first. So there is a limit to how much the state would lose in those taxes.
Mr. Mandel.
Madam Chair, Senators, so what Senator Eaton just referred to is actually also the other bill that we're working on. Why don't I spend just a couple minutes on that? This one is far less complicated. When you generate intellectual property the way we do here in Minnesota, and when you have companies like 3M, Medtronic, Cargill, and all of the giants of intellectual property that we have, in most states, and I've lived in a couple others and done this, you know, every state's looking at how do we capture benefit of all that R&D that those big companies do that ultimately they don't utilize in their own products. And every company that does significant R&D makes choices about what to put in their products. So there is intellectual property sitting on the shelf at large companies. So the question becomes, how can you get that out and in the hands of entrepreneurs and investors who can take those products in a different direction and build businesses around them? And I will tell you, I don't think any state's figured out how to do this. There's never been a great nexus in creating this type of activity. So what we've come up with is a way to, I'll say, effectively take the edge off for the big companies, give them an incentive to at least participate in this process, which we also think will create lots of opportunities for our larger companies and entrepreneurs to connect more often, perhaps invest in one another downstream, and tighten up our community. But effectively, here's what we're talking about. When a large company takes intellectual property, licenses it to a startup company, no different than the University of Minnesota would license technology to a startup company. And when that company ultimately is successful enough to pay royalties back, which will depend on, you know, how they set the parameters, what the markers are, and where, you know, where the product is going and how long, that when that happens, we'll provide some period of tax relief in the form of, this is not taxable income for corporate purposes, to the parent, not the parent, to the company that licensed the technology. So the licensor gets a few years of free tax royalties as an incentive to go out and engage in this. This activity rarely happens today. So we're not looking at activity that's currently being taxed and benefiting Minnesota and looking to take taxes off the table. What we're trying to do is incent economic activity that we believe could be really powerful. If we're wrong and it doesn't work, it never costs the state of Minnesota anything. And the worst case scenario is we get our big companies and small companies talking to each other more often. But the best case scenario, some of these technologies find their way to entrepreneurs. They start companies at UEL. They get investment through the angel investor tax credit, and our economy grows. So that's our intent with this bill.
Okay, Mr. Mandel, so you talked about which companies couldn't do this. It couldn't be a parent company, couldn't spin off. So what if I'm an individual employee working for 3M? I have this intellectual property thing, and then they decided they don't want to move forward on it. Could I start my own little small company, still work for 3M, and have my own company that's doing I take, you know, my own intellectual property, have this agreement with 3M, and go off and get other people working on that and stay employed at 3M? Would that be something? Or would I have to leave 3M? Or could I leave 3M and still do that?
Madam Chair, in terms of the legislation we're proposing, on the assumption that you would start your own company and that you would be able to be a licensee, meaning 3M would license technology to your new company, that would be fine. It's not part of a unitary group. As an inventor at 3M, they're going to own the technology. So, you know, the question about whether you could stay employed at 3M, license technology out to Senator Inc., the law would allow that. I suspect 3M would never do that, right? But who knows?
I mean,
that would be great. So, yeah, as long as there's no connection. Now, if 3M spins you out and owns 100% of Senator Inc., then that certainly would not be allowed under this law. But, yeah, if you start your own business and you can cut a deal with 3M and continue to get a paycheck for them, I think I know a lot of people that would love to talk to you about how you get that done.
Me too. Just suggesting it. Any other questions? Senator Skoy.
Madam Chair, then the only question, I guess, is to the department for future information. Their revenue estimate or impact note is unknown at this point. Is there any information that is going to change that, or is it just going to stay unknown? I mean, it's kind of hard to figure out what we're going to do in that regard. So maybe if they have some more information for us at some point.
Mr. Mandel?
We'll keep after them.
Yeah.
And Madam Chair and Senator Skoy, I think, you know, the reason we're not going to get much information from the department is, again, at the end of the day, what we're talking about is how much money would a company realize, a company that pays taxes. So let's just continue with the 3M conversation. You know, what would we be losing in tax revenues if 3M were to do this? Here's why we don't know that. One, this is not activity that's happening today. Two, we're talking about licenses that are private contracts, right? So 3M in one case may negotiate a license for an upfront payment of $25,000 and royalties that are 2% of sales starting once there's $1 million of sales within a three-year window or contingent on other investment, et cetera, et cetera. They may do a completely different licensing deal around a different technology with a different group of investors or a different management team. So at the end of the day, what we're talking about here is trying to encourage private contracts to move technology from a shelf into a business. And then whatever the agreement is, and that's why we targeted the royalties instead of the profits on the company, because we want the companies, the startup companies, to get the technology and be successful. And so the royalties, we're talking about a much smaller, way smaller amount of money than we're talking about in terms of profit. So the royalty stream back to 3M 3 years out could be $100,000. It could be $50,000. It could be $2 million. But we're talking about significantly smaller amounts that would be tax-free in terms of income. So I think we'll continue to work with the department, but they're going to have a really hard time coming up with, you know, any information that's going to be valuable for you without just making up some examples and telling you what it would look like.
Okay, thank you. And if you could continue to work with the department to see if we can get some information, that would be helpful.
Madam Chair, that concludes our presentation, and we'll move on now to Senator Ortman's bill. And Madam Chair, you need to lay over Senate file 1122 as amended, and then lay over Senate File 1010, if you would.
Okay. We will lay over Senate File 1122 as amended for possible inclusion in future omnibus bill, and we will lay over Senate File 1010.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Just for notice, since we don't have Senate File 1010, it can't be laid over. It's in the Jobs Committee, but it was here for discussion. So the minutes will just reflect that it was discussed and that only Senate File 1122 as amended was laid over. Senate File, Senator Ortman brings us Senate File 604. Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Senate File 604 would be an expansion of the research and development credit that we currently have in Minnesota law. In fact, Minnesota was nation-leading and adopted a research and development credit first in 1982. Since 1982, other states have adopted research and development credits, and we are no longer the nation leader because of some restrictions that we have in the application of the research and development credit. Arizona is currently at 11%, California 15%, Delaware has a flat 10%, as does Georgia, Massachusetts, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania, and Rhode Island has 16.9%. The way our research and development tax credit works is that a qualifying company with, say, gets a 10% of the first $2 million calculated with the base amount, which is an IRS definition, and then 2.5% over. What 604 would do is it would allow us to calculate that differently and to take out the base measurement in the first tier and then use whichever works out greater to the benefit of the taxpayer using the base amount or going back to qualified expenses. And so I asked our fiscal analyst, who's very good, Shelby McQuaid, to explain to me how this might work so that I can explain it for the committee. If a small Minnesota business invests $1 million in research and development, only some of its expenses qualify. Capital expenditures for major equipment don't qualify, but salaries and small supplies and small equipment would qualify towards counting that investment. Because we rely on that base definition at the federal level, 50% goes off the table. That's subtracting the base amount. So if you had $1 million in qualified expenditures, 50% comes off at the start, and you can only qualify for a tax credit for up to that remaining $500,000, then Minnesota would give you a 10% credit on that $500,000. If we change the calculation and take out that base amount, then the Minnesota company that invests $1 million doesn't have to subtract $500,000 and would get 10% of the full $1 million, and that would be up to $100,000. And so you can see that that first tax credit would be significant. And the small businesses that we've talked to say it's enough to hire that next researcher, that next salaried position to invest in research and development.
So then, it's a first dollar, counting the first dollar.
Exactly right, Madam Chair. And then the second tier right now allows for 2.5% over that first $1 million and minus the base amount. Our businesses are telling us that they're not really qualifying for that second tier. So what we want to do is expand the definition on that second tier to allow more expenses to qualify for that next 2.5%. There is a fiscal note on this, to be sure, but I think that what we're doing is actually helping those smaller businesses that are actually invested in research and development, and because of the qualifications of what does qualify and what doesn't for an expense, we're really talking about the jobs that here in the legislature we've been saying we want to support and encourage. So, members, when I've talked to folks, say, from Mayo or some of our, other of our high-tech companies, we're finding that there are spin-off companies, but those spin-off companies are going elsewhere because of the tax treatment. And that's what we don't want. If we're going to find spin-off technology and we're going to innovate here at these bigger corporations, we want those spin-off companies to build and invest right here. And I think our research and development tax credit needs to compete. It is refundable. And so that money, when they receive it, these small businesses are actually taking that refund and hiring new people using those refund dollars. The Minnesota High Tech Association is very supportive of this. They brought it to us. And Mr. Tollefson from the Minnesota High Tech Association would like to testify in support.
Thank you, Senator Ortman. This approach is also is independent of the amount of money that we could put into it, correct? I mean, we could use the approach, this first dollar approach, and increase eligible expenses, and then from there on it could be scalable. Is that correct?
Well, Madam Chair, we could we could do like they've done in the Angel Investment Credit and put a cap on how much. Mm-hmm. But then we would have competition for these tax credits, and I'd hate to see some businesses turned away because we didn't have enough.
Senator Ortman, I didn't mean it that way. I meant that the percentages that were applied are scalable. We could bring down the credit by applying different percentages to the approach that you made on how you calculate what's eligible for the credit. Right?
Madam Chair, yes, but right now that base amount reflects the federal law, and we're going to have to either use that base amount or not. And I think what this bill does is take that base amount calculation out, but Ms. McQuay may have more information about that. I think it's always possible with the formula to change the percentages and things, but I think this mm-hmm. is the most straightforward approach.
Madam Chair and Senator Ortman, that's correct. And if you did want to make it revenue neutral and try and still capture that first dollar, you could do that, or you could just lower it a couple percentage points. I'm not quite sure on how much you would have to lower that 10% to make it mm-hmm. revenue neutral, but you certainly could do that.
Not necessarily asking for it to be revenue neutral, just it seems to me that what Senator Ortman is proposing is a better incentive, if you will, for the R&D credit, a better way of doing it for Minnesota. But if we determine that we like that way, which I think sounds very attractive, but we don't have we don't have $75 million to spend on it, where would we what would be a way of adopting this approach as a superior approach to what we do currently, being able to capture the first dollar or the company's first dollar, and just looking at other ways of lowering the cost at this particular time, not necessarily making it revenue neutral. Welcome to the committee, and if you'd identify yourself for the record.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is John Tollefson. I'm the Manager of Public Policy at the Minnesota High Tech Association. And we represent high tech companies who operate in Minnesota at very small size, medium size, and large size, and a rather broad definition of high tech to include medical technology, various science research firms. And this is an excellent bill for these companies. It is a direct investment in these high paying jobs in Minnesota to attract them here, to retain those that are here, and to really expand the research and development that happens in Minnesota. It is the goal of our members to make Minnesota one of the top five high-tech corridors in the country, and this bill would directly invest in that goal. What it does, in large part, is make the research and development tax credit available to a lot more companies that are not currently utilizing it. So we have our neighbors at the old grain exchange building in Minneapolis is the Cocoa MSP. And this is where a lot of really small startup companies gather and just rent a desk space or something. And we've done some talks with them about R&D and so forth. And they have no use for this. With the base and all of the different requirements for tracking expenditures and so forth, it's really not available to them. So this first dollar spending allows them to really start tracking that, start utilizing this research and development tax base, get some money back in to their companies invested from the state to expand their research and development operations. And the jobs we're talking about are among the highest paying jobs in Minnesota. The average salary of a research or generally a high-tech worker in Minnesota is about $79,000, which is 74% higher than the average private sector wage in Minnesota. So these are exactly the kind of jobs that we believe we should be supporting in Minnesota. And there's other research to show that for every new high-tech job, there are another four jobs created in Minnesota's economy. And so we are looking to really expand opportunities just like this to get more growth, continued growth in this sector in Minnesota. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Tollefson. Are there questions or comments for Senator Ortman or Mr. Tollefson? Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just want to be sure I'm clear on this. The current base is 50% of the eligible expenses, and this is going to first dollar?
That's correct.
And so, Senator Ortman, did you contemplate maybe moving the 50% to 20% or 10%? What would be the impact of that for these small startup companies so that they would have some skin in the game in their first dollar of R&D, but they wouldn't have 50% to start? Is there anybody thought about that or contemplated that?
You know, Mr. Chair, I hadn't, because the credit is only 10% of the investment as it is. So if a company spends $1 million in research and development in qualifying expenses, not the other related unrelated expenses, yeah, but just the salary and the supplies, that $1 million would only qualify for 10% in a refundable credit. So you're still capped out at a very small number, I would say. You've already got businesses that are investing quite a bit before they ever qualify for a refundable credit.
That's helpful. Thank you, Senator Ortman.
Ms. Quaid?
Madam Chair and Senator Squire, I'd also add that the base amount is an IRS calculation, and the IRS has set a minimum base amount of 50% of qualified research expenses that triggers off of gross receipts. And so to actually change that base amount from the 50% would be very difficult to do because you're tying to federal and then you're decoupling from that federal. So it would really work easier if there are changes that the committee would like to make to this proposal to work within the confines of the tier percentage or the tier thresholds.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Senator Ortman.
Madam Chair, if I could add one other piece here. Sure. In case folks are wondering, the refundable tax credit would only apply to the portions of expenses that were incurred here in Minnesota. So mm-hmm. if there were others in other states or elsewhere, they would not qualify. It's only for that portion of the business that's incurred in Minnesota.
And that's current law.
Correct.
And that would be maintained. You have to invest in Minnesota. Well, thank you very much, Senator Ortman. It's a very intriguing approach to retooling the R&D credit, and I hope that we're able to do something in that area as well.
Thank you
very
Chair.
Much, Mr. Tollefson.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
We will be announcing the schedule for next week shortly. We will meet at least a couple of times in either in the division or the full committee.
Madam Chair, will you be laying the bill over?
Yes,
for,
indeed.
Thank you.
Senate File 604 is late order. And you did not have any amendments, is that correct?
No.
Senate File 604 is laid over.
Thank you.
Is there further business before the committee? We'll be sending out agendas. Seeing none, we stand adjourned. Thank you very much.